PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards, and with me this week is my buddy, Josh Babbitt. A lot of you might know him as JB. Mr. JB, welcome back to another episode.
Glad to be here.
Now, we're recording on a Thursday, which is pretty late in the week for me. It is 9:30 Eastern time in the morning, and you were, if memory serves, in the Carolinas all of yesterday.
Yes, that is correct. I've had quite the last 10 to 14 days.
10 to 14 hours as well, I hear. Yes. You're a maniac. Let's just start there. I know you have a pretty heavy, heavy schedule this time of year, which is fun to follow. Frankly, it's been a wild ride. We had the Morgan Cup, which you hosted out in Vegas. And then you had a Titleist event over in, I believe, New Mexico. And then went over to the Carolinas in Trouble in Caledonia, one of my favorite spots on the planet, in Myrtle Beach. And that was with Ben Hogan this past week. Surely you've got something coming up tomorrow.
I don't, but it's kind of crazy. I went to Las Vegas for a TPC Las Vegas event, the Morgan Cup that we did with Cobra Golf, and then flew back to Nashville, and I was here for a couple of days.
And a couple of hours, right?
And then flew to New Mexico. And when you get to Albuquerque, you have about a 90-minute drive to this course. So did that. Had a great time out at Black Mesa. If you get a chance to play Black Mesa, it's definitely worth it. Very different, despite both being kind of desert golf. And then flew home, had 7 hours, and roughly did some laundry, then hopped in the car and drove 9.5 hours to Myrtle Beach, Pauly's Island, for True Blue, and then drove back, got here about an hour and a half ago. And I'm home for about, I'd say, 8 days, 9 days. And then I'm going to PGA National, home of the Honda Classic and some other places, for a True Temper and Callaway dream foursomes.
You basically just had like a standard golfer's dream year in a matter of weeks, watching guys have their minds blown with a bunch of equipment. It sounds like there's some pretty cool 2022 stories that are being shared out there that we can't get out of the guys yet, which is too bad. I might send some, you know, personal messages here shortly. Is there anything that stands out as the most surprising over the last month for you?
Well, from a golf course perspective, Black Mesa, because it's in the middle of nowhere in New Mexico, and it is just as scenic as can be. And there's, when you travel for golf, there's all kinds of golf courses, from links to desert to parklet. You know, there's a million different styles, but coming from two different desert courses, they were very, very different. Are you a desert golf fan?
I played in Vegas, I think, once. You were there, obviously, for that at TPC. I was baffled watching.
I mean, you played in Palm Springs.
Yeah, I suppose that counts, but that's very lush there, and there are homes that surround the golf course, so that it's totally different, right? Like, when I was watching or following along with the Titleist event, it was insane how different it looks from my standard experience here in Ohio, which is just, you know, green grass and houses. We don't get an awful lot of, like, pure golf courses that don't have houses wrapped on them, and when you do, it's just trees. I mean, that's all it is. Whereas out there, it was like
there was nothing.
Yeah, the golf course is interrupting complete nothingness, which is wild. It's such an intro. Like, every picture you put up on social media or on the forum, it was hard to wrap my head around it. And I have to know, is it weird to go from those wildly different backdrops in events like these?
No, but it does make you think. And we were having a conversation about, what do we prefer, desert to, I'll call it, East Coast golf. You know, me personally, East Coast golf, I prefer, you know, that lush green style, the Parkland style. That's a preference, but I love getting away and seeing the other styles too. I love the picturesque view of water on every hole, or the different kind of terrain and what they build around it, where it's not through the mountainous kind of views. It's just a preference thing.
Huh. Yeah. I mean, and I guess maybe it's from playing the same sort of type of course so much and, you know, traveling to nothing remarkable, especially sliding up and down the East Coast instead of going across. You see something like that, at least for me, as someone who doesn't travel a ton for golf. And it's like, you know, it's cool. I'm super into it, but there's a lot of conditions where you look out and you're like, well, I can't hit it there. It's pretty obvious. So there's a running joke with a lot of guys on the THP forum who play out in those, you know, desert-y conditions. I say there's no way I'm putting a club on that kind of condition. They're like, well, you just do it out here. It's just what happens sometimes while you're fighting the scorpions. And that was kind
of the beauty of the Hideaway where we host the Granddaddy with Callaway, is that it is completely desert golf, but you would never know it because of the manicured nature of that golf course. It is something special. I love the old school nature. You know, the club that I belong to here is very old school, where it's up and down kind of track. And I love that kind of architecture, which is very different from where I just was at Black Mesa, and even different from Myrtle Beach or Pauley's Island with True Blue. It's a different kind of golf, but I love traveling for golf and seeing the different things. And I hope more people get a chance to do that in the future. I know golf travel was big, then it stopped completely, and now it's slowly coming back around. And I absolutely love it.
You mentioned your golf course, and I think one of the biggest differences that we're talking about is they use fairways as backdrops, almost, you know, running against each other. And it sort of adds to the challenge because you can't miss, you know, to a certain level. Otherwise, you are completely blocked. And if you do miss, you may as well miss another 50 yards. So you're correct. In another fairway. But it definitely presents a different profile. Now, to the credit of your course, half the front nine is down then back up, so it makes it very interesting from a visual perspective, because you do get to see a lot of course. My favorite part about your course is going inside and sitting there and checking out, you know, half the golf course visually and watching
in
other
the restaurant
people watching other people make bad decisions while I enjoy a delicious meal. So
and we got to do that a little bit at True Blue. You know, you get to sit above the 18th hole and watch people coming in. And I always love courses that are built that way, where the clubhouse/restaurant is on a golf hole, so you can sit and enjoy it and watch people struggle the same way you do. And every person that's coming in, every golfer that's sitting there eating or having a drink, is judging that person.
Oh yeah.
Knowing that they just did the same thing.
That's the beauty of Caledonia and True Blue, which are across the street from one another, sister courses. They both have an incredible 18th setup where the backdrop is the eating area and a nice little porch patio type of thing. I'll remember, and this was years ago, Josh, when we were there together. It was probably 6 years ago. I was sitting on the 18th at True Blue, and you have a tendency to root for the people coming in. Sometimes you want to see them, you know, do bad, but most of the time you want to see a good shot, because then you get to have a little fun with it. And we watched a guy hit and spin a ball back and like lip the cup on the 18th at True Blue, which is a huge, huge deal. It's not an easy golf hole. And there was probably 20 or 30 guys on the patio there, and everyone cheered. It was
super cool.
Like some random dude who we'd never met and will never meet. Hits a golf shot, and he's in the fairway like, did I do something good? What just happened? You know, that's the fun part about being a golfer, right? Is you have that that unintentional camaraderie that shows up once in a while.
Let me ask you a question about travel golf or playing golf in general.
Yeah.
And this is about pace of play,
which,
you know, I'm kind of a fan of playing fast golf, but I don't expect others to play at my pace, and I never would. What do you think is the number one cause, from the individual standpoint, forget golf courses, stacking people or anything like that, of slow play?
Trepidation.
Because I think my perspective changed. I always thought it was pre-shot routines and 16 practice swings and walking around putts, and I realize now it's not.
I think there's a couple things, I've had the thrill of going to some pretty significantly different golf courses, some special courses in my time on THP. And I think the one thing I try and remind the guys who go with me is, look, you know, you're going to a place that's unusual for you. It's spectacular in the way it's designed. And you kind of just got to weather that storm and accept that you're going to be there and not, you know, be visually stimulated beyond, you know, just playing your game of golf. So I think people get pretty wrapped up in the different nuances of a golf course. I think they get a little bit too hyper-focused on conditions. Like, I'll give you an example. I play, you know, 60 to 80 rounds on the same golf course every year. My perspective is I'm going to go to certain holes and have expectations of what I'm going to do already before I hit the tee. If it's a new golf course, unfamiliar to me, I'm going to analyze it a bit more. I'm going to make considerations on what to do and then maybe have a little bit of hesitation before I execute. So long story short, I think sometimes pace of play comes from people just being unsure, visually overstimulated and unsure.
I think that's fair. What I witnessed, and I'm not just speaking of our group or groups over the last multiple events and things like that, people are not ready. And what I mean by that is that sounds like a negative, and I'm not meaning it that way. I mean, they pull up to their ball and then they just sit there.
Just taking it in, yeah.
Or they pull up to the next tee box, for instance. And in our case, one person might be posting, the other person might be checking yardages or things like that, but nobody's doing anything. They're all just kind of sitting there. And I often wonder, because at my home course, I see some of that. Do you see that at your course where you're waiting on a group and you look up and they're just all four of them, let's say, are sitting in their cart waiting?
No.
For nothing. There's nothing in front of them.
No, people don't do that here. And in fact, I get pretty salty at my group if we're kind of messing around. And I know some of them listen a little bit to the podcast. So if, I think unless we're waiting, I don't care what happens. If we're waiting on a group, take your time, do whatever you need to do. Check an email. I mean, I really don't care. But, you know, if you've just made a birdie and I have to wait for you to hit, do not sit in your cart and check the football scores before heading up to the tee. That's my perspective anyway.
I also posted a great picture from a week ago with two people standing on a par three, standing directly next to each other, both lasering a flag and thinking like, do these guys hate each other? Yeah. Do they not trust each other? Know, what's going on there?
That's an interesting one. One of those is J4U, right? Dougie, our good buddy.
Yeah. I think it comes down to people can't pull the trigger without doing the laser first. It's part of the pre-shot routine.
Yeah. I think it's just as bad as a waggle or just as bad as anything else. I mean, you come to be super comfortable with your own yardage and acquiring for themselves. I do it myself. If I'm already out of the cart and like walking to the tee that's, let's call it 5 yards away, and someone says it's 148, I'm gonna make sure. I've already put the effort in.
I'm not gonna lie, that's flat out bizarre.
But if I'm already there, if I'm sitting in my cart, like I said, checking the football scores or whatever, I guess in my case the hockey scores, I'm not going to grab it, then go up after being told it's 148, unless I'm playing in a money game and I don't trust anyone. So maybe you, I'm undecided. If you're giving me a number, although you typically would let me do that. So it's fine.
Yeah. I'm actually shying away from laser, and I'm not going to get too sidetracked here, but moving more to a GPS in the different quadrants of the green.
That's
more than I am a laser.
Interesting. We need to have a talk about that because you have one of the coolest devices out there. I would say you have a laser that also has kind of an overview GPS feature on it.
Well, it has the overview and it has the green with the heat reading map. It's the SL2 from Voice Caddy. I take it to every course I go to. And what I'm finding more and more is I don't even look through the laser.
Really?
Yeah. So what I did is, you know, thankfully ShotScope gives you this kind of data. Mm-hmm. And, you know, greens hit, things like that. And what I'm finding is I'm not as great at seeing where the green is, where the pin is on the green, as I thought I was, even through the laser. Like, oh, that looks like middle right. Okay. And then I get there and it's front right, and I come up slightly short, and then you short side yourself. And, you know, so what I found is if I'm using the GPS, whether that's built in on the cart, a watch, whatever you're using, and I can pick a quadrant of an area to hit to that's within 5 yards, I'm good with that. I'm not good enough to where I need that 0.6 yardage. I much prefer the aspect of where I need to hit it on the green and where, more importantly, where I can't miss. And that's what I really have been struggling with lately is I played a round right after our round together, which means nothing to the people listening here, but I missed like the first seven greens and all of them were short-sighted. No matter what I was thinking with the pin placement, it was wrong. So I kind of recalculated the way I went about things and changed up to, hey, let's pick a quadrant on the green to shoot for, something that if it's at my home course, maybe I've been before. If it's at a new course, maybe I know it's safe, and play to there and give myself a chance at a putt. And it helped me quite a bit. I was, I'll say, a little surprised. I thought I needed that exactness, and it turned out that may have been hurting me.
Yeah, so I used Sky Caddy for quite a few years. I got sort of annoyed by the yearly fee, but that wasn't the big reason I went away from it. I love the idea of having that overview. So I used an SGXW, which is the touchscreen, I believe. I think it's touchscreen. I haven't used it in a while. Either way, you can move around the hole and find a spot you want to aim to, and that gives you your number to the hole from there, which is super cool. And then once you get to your ball, looking at the green, you can go to green view. And I was always one of those guys, like, tell me a number I can hit to, tell me a number I can't hit to as well. So
yeah,
you know, if it says the front of the green online with you right now is this number, I'll add 10 to that if it's a tough pin and feel really good about my opportunity there. I love doing that. And I'll be honest with you, the biggest reason why I stopped, Josh, is just pure unfettered laziness. Because every time you finish, you have to prep your unit again, which is charging.
Yeah. So in this case, there's two things that have really changed my perspective on it. First, switching to a Moto Caddy, shout out to them. Mine has the GPS built in that you've seen and used. If you charge the unit, you're charging the GPS. So yeah, there was nothing to do there. The second one was when I started using that laser, it was, oh, wow, this information is significantly better than just shooting a random object on the thing and hoping it's right. And usually was, but the GPS just helped me more. And I wonder when we got away from that to you have to have a laser. Maybe yeah, it was the pros using it. Maybe it was the fantastic marketing. And there's nothing wrong with a laser. They're great units.
It has to be convenience. I mean, there's absolutely no thought put into getting a laser in the bag. It's already in the bag. It will be charged until it's not, because most just die randomly. I know my Bushnell, I love it. My Pro X2, it just, every once in a while, it's just gone. It's done. I have to borrow for the rest of that round. But you know, it's that freedom to not worry about it. And the other thing about it is with my detailed features on the Sky Caddy was that I had to prep everywhere I went. So if I was going to go play around somewhere specifically and I wanted the detailed information, and
you had to download that course.
Exactly. And maybe
so you don't have to do that anymore.
Yeah.
And that changes it a lot. Most of them come with about 30,000 loaded on there. Okay. And it's pretty dynamic. I've tried the cell phone app ones. They're not quite as good. There always seems to be a little off or a little slow. And like, you'll pull up to your ball and it'll say, oh, you're 163. And then you actually, by the time you hit it and you go back and you look and it says you were 153.
Yeah. 155, which is probably good for most people.
Yeah. But what I found myself doing with the GPS, and we had no plan of talking about this.
Yeah.
Is perfect. I pick a quadrant that is a little off the back. So when I do miss hit it, I still hit the green. And that's been probably my saving grace so far, because I got to play in an event coming up in January.
When I do miss hit it, that basically you just JDAX'd yourself, by the way. Good for you.
He's a previous guest on this show and in that event that I have coming up that I have to play in.
You've changed my, I kind of want to go back to it now. You know, I've just been lazily going along with this.
Is that a word?
Lazily? I think so.
Is it?
You want to try?
Genuinely
challenge
curious.
Me. Yeah, that's perfect. I make up words all the time. It's fine. It's my once a week here on Off Course to either make up a word or say something weird.
You did have my favorite phrase of the year mumbled on this podcast,
which is what
you called yourself a wobbly Caucasian.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, I don't remember what I was trying to say. So it's perfect. I do think that it's worth looking back into. The idea that you have a hybrid of the two where you can actually shoot the pin and still get the information you're looking for is pretty wild. I think that serves for, what's the battery life on that, the SL2?
You know, that's a good question. It's better than I thought because I didn't charge it between New Mexico, multiple rounds there, and Myrtle Beach and multiple rounds there, and it worked the entire time.
Wow.
My gut feeling says with that unit, you should charge it every two rounds. You know, the laser continues to work with the battery completely dead, but the GPS, you need it to be charged up.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So you've seen and chatted with a number of companies over the last couple of weeks and, or I suppose months at this point. And, are you getting a pulse on 2022 right now about how things are going? Are you getting an idea of,
as far as new equipment coming out,
new equipment, their ability to put equipment together and ship it out to people? You know, yeah. What does it look like right now?
It's cautiously optimistic. Is the best way I could say it. I've seen most of the brand's new stuff. And there's some exciting things in there. There's some stuff that's a little baffling. I'm not going to go into too much detail, but components are still a little bit of a struggle when it comes to shafts and grips. But I think most companies have a handle on that. There's some really good shaft companies like True Temper and Project X and US Team EMEA that are getting stuff ready and able to put it in gloves. And there's some ones out there that are pretty far behind. You know, I spoke to some friends that told me that KBS is really, really far behind. And, you know, we'll see how it continues to shake out. We still have a lot of time to go for that, but I would expect most launches to hit where we expect them to, you know, January, and then with release dates sometime between January and April, like they always are. And I think we'll have product available. And it's exciting product.
Yeah. I have a really weird sidetracky question to that, and sidetracky is not a word. Do you think with this condition we're the closest we've ever been to the potential of a company selling heads only?
No. Would you like me to expand on that?
I mean, it's up to you. I think it's an interesting thought because, you know, obviously it's easier on the driver side of things.
You finish, my chair is so noisy today. Yeah. So if people are hearing that, right. I apologize. I need a new chair and it's very noisy.
Yeah. Maybe you need to get one of these sweet gamer chairs that I have.
No.
You know, and I understand the benefits of getting a shaft in there is great for the consumer, but at the same time, there are a lot of guys who are very pro one company and have repetitive purchases through that company, and the consistency on the adapters are pretty good right now. I mean, my Cobra adapters from years ago still work. They might not be saying the right things through the window, but they still function. You know, that you don't see that possibility even closing at all.
No. Here's why, and not that it shouldn't. I would say part of it is because if you take yourself out of the internet bubble, most people, golfers out of the 25 million in the US, they have no idea what kind of shaft they're looking for. Yeah. They just know that 35 years ago they played a stiff and they got older. So they either continue with that or they play a regular, not realizing that that really doesn't mean anything. So I think that it would do itself a disservice. Now, two things come to mind here. Could a company also sell heads only? Maybe. Yeah,
how do you draw the pricing difference between the two?
Right. And the second part of that equation would be Amazon has done wonderful and horrible things to the consumer. Wonderful in that if I order something right now, chances are I could have it by 3 p.m.
Yeah.
If you horrible in that when I order something right now, I expect it by 3 p.m.
Yeah.
In the old days, when you got a club, you either went to the store and picked it up, or if you went through a I'll call it a fitting. It really wasn't. But if you special ordered a club because of the grip or the shaft you wanted, you waited a month or two for it.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty consistent with what we're having now. You know, obviously in the middle of the pandemic, it was a little bit further than that, and some companies better than others. I know at one point Ping was months and months and months behind. They still are pretty far behind. But I think that there's a disconnect in the we need it, we want it, we need to have it right now, and the if you're going to special order, this is what you get. Many big box stores, even during those back orders, had those drivers sitting on the shelves. You could go in and get them. Now, they might not be the grip and the shaft you wanted, but that's part of it. We demanded more shaft options from companies. Then we demanded more no cost increase shaft options. Then we got those. And then when they slowly scaled back from those due to not having them in stock, and we had some small delays, and small is a relative term, this is what happened. I don't think we're going to go head only. The pricing scale of that would be really, really difficult for a manufacturer based on, you know, what they're purchasing in bulk for these items versus what the actual worth is. I think it would be a challenge.
Yeah. Just curious, you know, the strain is there. And
yeah,
you know, I've always wondered if it would happen even from you purchase from our website only, you could do heads, but you know, I knew that cost would always be a challenge. And
I know that one of the companies, I want to say it was Titleist. Yeah. You could, if you ordered Vokey wedges and they were back ordered, I did finger quotes and people can't see that, but if they were back ordered, you could order them without grips and get them faster.
Is the most internet golfer thing when picking up a club or getting a club, changing out the grip or changing the adapter settings in a driver before hitting it?
The most internet golfer? No, but it's up there.
Yeah.
The most internet. I mean, there's some big ones out there. You know?
So we had, I don't remember who, one of the participants at the Ben Hogan event. Oh, credit to Hogan for putting together full sets of clubs that those guys absolutely loved based on what I read the last couple of days. I mean, I've always been a sort of a shill for PTX Pro, despite never giving them full time in the bag, but loving them every time I hit them. Those guys love those clubs, including the putters, which they were making bombs with.
Yeah, we saw some crazy putts, and there's some videos on it on our forum. Shout out to D Nice rolling in about a 25 footer to win the event. It was pretty awesome. Yeah.
But one of the guys, and I can't remember who it was, posted the first night. So you guys had laid out all 14 clubs with the 18th at True Blue as a backdrop. So these guys walk in, see all their clubs, check them out. One of the guys, before actually hitting a club, adjusted the driver in his villa that night. And I couldn't think of a better example of what it's like to be an internet golfer.
That's pretty awesome.
Making an adjustment.
I think that there's a lot of things that I go back to the laser thing. Somebody's lasering and standing right next to you and you're doing it. That's golfers do weird things. We're all guilty of it. I mean, we're talking into microphones at a desk and people are going to listen to this. How weird is that?
Yeah, true. Well, we're a lot weirder because we both have Funko Pops in the background. So
I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah. But what do you think is the most internet? You know what? I'm going to give you an example of something.
Okay.
That was lay it on internet golf. I hosted an event, back-to-back shaft events with two brilliant shaft people. One had been designing shafts for decades at this point for tour players. And when he told the internet golfer that the shaft wasn't going to change the launch angle and spin that much, they told him he was wrong. And then fast forward exactly 10 days, and another shaft person said on a live stream that, you know, you might see a few hundred RPMs of spin, but it's really about how the shaft is going to help you bring the head to the ball. The shaft by itself isn't going to do this. And they were like, he doesn't know what he's talking about. I always relate back to that. You know, it reminds me in the fitness world, which clearly this body isn't designed by fitness. They have this thing called bro science, which is comical, where they take these random tests and apply it to, you need this many milligrams of this and this and this for protein and everything. It's the same thing. Like, you heard one time that this is a high launch, low spin, like every shaft on the freaking planet is marketed as now, because nobody wants to say high launch, high spin. And all of a sudden, this is the holy grail of what's going to be happening. And it's just, that's what I would say is the number one internet golfer-ish thing.
You know, I think there's a decent challenge there, because conditionally speaking, you have certain style of shafts that go into certain styles of heads. And I think people don't recognize that when you change the head out, you're actually changing a lot of the mechanics of the experience. So they say, well, you know, I had X100s in this, and I had, you know, something different in the other ones, and the X100s launch way lower, way lower, way lower. The reality is the X1s were probably in a player style iron, and, you know, the other shaft would be in like a super game improvement iron that has launch conditions built into the head itself. And so you just get comfortable. I think what people get lost on, Josh, and this is the one thing that I struggle with, is I think our buddy from Jason over at Kinetics said it best. It's marrying that condition between timing and contact of a swing. Yes. And that plays a pretty heavy role in the results that are unfolding. And I think people should look more, they should look more like fitting a pair of dress shoes on than, you know, trying to pick something that looks different or sounds different. You know what I mean? Like, they're all shoes, but, you know, you gotta get one that walks right and feels right. And, you know,
my shoes don't walk, but, let me
walk this in them, bro.
I'm already probably angering everybody.
Yeah.
How many times a year do we hear loft jacking, and loft is what determines distance and everything else?
We just had that yesterday. So
if that were solely the case, and you couple that with, oh, I'm launching it too low, maybe I need a shaft change, those two things don't go hand in hand. If loft is determining distance, the shaft doesn't matter, first of all, if that's the case. In reality, the shaft is uber important for promoting, so you're not fighting things. But you are not going to get a huge launch difference compared to the loft of the club and the weight placement in the club with a shaft. You just won't.
Let me cycle this a little bit differently, and to say that, again, it might be the same head condition. There are not too many places where you can go hit the same head with different shafts, short of maybe, you know, Club Champion. and you get to experience it. But the other thing to think about is, while a shaft might not change the condition of spin on a product, the weight could. So if you're hitting 130 in one shaft and 95 in another, your potential to spin could surely change in the way you deliver
your videos that we shot recently comparing two different irons that had those shafts in it say otherwise. But
what's that?
You had pretty good contact and pretty similar launch with two products that were similar with different shafts when we did a video recently.
Yeah, but here's where it gets interesting, right? Because the weight was actually relatively close. I think it was
about 15 grams.
2 or 3 grams. If we're talking about Apex.
I thought it was one. No, I was talking about the one before that. It was like 120 and 105.
Okay. Yeah. But my point being, if you replace a shaft in a head and you get different results, and you, let's say you see 750 RPMs of spin, the conditions like weight, the conditions like swing weight, both play a pretty significant role.
They can.
And I think those are things that get really lost. Like, obviously you have the design features of a shaft, which do play a role in quality of performance.
Without question.
No question.
Without question.
You know, otherwise we wouldn't talk about shafts ever.
Yes. No, and but I definitely want to say I'm not minimizing the performance of a shaft. It is very important.
Yeah. But if you drill it down to, were the weights the same? Were the swing weight points identical? The likelihood is the answer is no. And obviously different golfers are going to have a different impact with those types of products. Not to mention swing speed changes a little bit. There's a whole mess of things that matter more than purely how much of these spin conditions going to change between these two shafts.
And impact and golf ball. But yeah. Let me
slow down.
let me sum this up to go back to the internet golfer side we were talking about. So I was talking to a friend of mine who works for a shaft manufacturer, and he was talking about how he texted me a screenshot of his GC quad and what he saw with the, with this product he was testing out, a 2022 driver. And he's like, yeah, it doesn't spin at all. I need to get the spin up. And he could just go from, he uses an 8-degree head. I said, why don't you just go to a 9-degree? Oh, as soon as I adjust that, I see too much face angle, offset. I was like, you gotta be kidding me. Just adjust offset. The loft 1 degree.
Offset. You know, in defense to him, when I was at TPI a number of years ago, they were trying to fit me for a driver, and we were messing with the settings, and I was hitting bombs. They had put me into, I think, a TSI 3, one of the TSIs, the early models, or maybe it was TS at that time.
It was TS.
Yeah, TS, and had a great shaft pairing, and I was just striping it. He's like, let me change something. So he made a small adjustment of the head, and I started spray fading everything. He's like, what the hell just happened? I said, I don't know. He's like, this is what we're going with. Do not ever change this, the head. So whether or not I just had like a momentary emotional blitz of stupidity, I don't know. But there could be, it's a comfort thing, right? You gotta walk away from your comfort.
I think so. I mean, if top line and offset were huge determining factors for most golfers, I'm speaking to the masses here, they would never be able to hit an iron, because most iron sets are progressive in some form or fashion. Most have some sort of offset and also progressive. And when you get down to something larger, like a utility hybrid fairway wood or anything else, how would you even be able to look at it?
Yeah. I don't think offset has ever been a problem for me. I actually just had this debate yesterday, but I also come a little bit inside on my move with a bit of a shut face. So I'm assuming all the concerns of offset are eliminated based on the fact of my path. I'm guessing that's a bigger role. Visually speaking, though, offset doesn't bother me at all. If anything, looking at a product like the Rev 33s, Ricky's irons, those things are terrifying. Those things have like onset. And I look at those, I'm like, these are terrifying to me.
And now to screw up this entire conversation, we filmed a video earlier this year where you hit two golf balls and had over 1,000 RPMs of spin difference between two golf balls through with an average on multiple shots.
Yeah. Well, so the golf ball is the conversation, right?
Yeah. I mean, the golf ball fitting is big.
Let's double down, because we basically made this an internet golfer show, right?
Yeah, I know. This is way off course.
I love it. It's perfect. But there was a guy, and I'll point him out because I don't know if he even listens to the show, our good buddy and staff member M. Ward on the forum, Michael, who said he gave up on a ball after they went to a certain style of core, which had water in it, ignoring the part where they were like, multiple releases afterwards that it were completely thrown away because that one ball didn't work for him.
And you know, like, I don't have as much of an issue with that because there are other products that exist. But I get the argument against that, because I'll give you a perfect example. When Callaway launched the Chrome Soft, there were a huge amount of golfers who were like, that's too soft, I just don't like the feel of it. And they never tried it again.
It's I too never cheap.
It wasn't expensive. And they never tried it again. And then now you have people who find a CSX, let's say, and they're stronger swingers, and they hit it and they're like, holy cow, this ball is fast. It spins. It's low spin off the tee. So the amount of changes in golf ball technology over the last even 5 years is astronomical.
Yeah. But that's the funny part, right? You get so anchored in onto what works for you that you almost throw away every other possibility by doing so. And, you know, you get one bad experience and suddenly like that, maybe that's more of a brand thing than it is a golfer thing. Cause we do that with, you know, cars, we do that with everything we buy. I'm assuming that you get one bad experience. You're like, nah, no, never again. I actually had that with Burger King about three decades ago, and I've been very consistently avoiding Burger King. So
that's super bizarre.
They're probably not going to sponsor the show, so I'm not worried about blasting them. It's just not that good, Josh.
I mean, I don't seek out Burger King or anything, but one bad. So are you the guy who goes to a restaurant and it's not great? Let's say a new restaurant opens up. It's not great. You don't give it a second chance. You're like, they're shunned for life. It's like done.
One restaurant.
Yeah.
One time.
Yeah.
If I'm ill from it, I would say, yeah, they're done. If I'm absolutely ill, if I have like a bad experience with a waiter or waitress, or
it's called server, Stan.
Server. I think, didn't I cover whatever. Don't cancel me.
I actually got yelled at. That's not the right word. Strongly dismissed when I mistakenly called a flight attendant a stewardess last week on the airline. I didn't mean any ill intent with it, but I called her a stewardess and it got pretty testy.
You were flying Pan Am?
I was not. I don't think that's possible anymore.
So to answer your question, if I am like actually ill from it, yeah, that never again. And that might include some foods as well. But if it's just like a bad experience with the wait staff or an okay cooked meal, I'll probably give it another try, but not go to that particular dish.
Okay, so let me see if I have this right, because I want to wrap this up. Careful. For people here. You go to a new restaurant.
Yeah.
Everybody's raving about the burgers. You know, yeah. You go to this new burger place. You eat the burger. You're like, this is freaking terrible. You'll go back and possibly try another burger if it wasn't absolutely horrible. But golfers are like, nope, I'm out. No,
straight to Yelp, blast them and never go back. No. Well, that's the hard part. And I think this kind of, it's the same story in golf, right? There are so many good options out there that you try one, you're like, nah, I don't know. And I'm surely you find one. It's not like you're going to throw it in the water because you know it's a premium golf ball. But, you know, I think like anything else, you find your favorite places and you find your favorite dishes. And that typically is where you end up, unless you're a total foodie, which I know you are, which is probably why you're sitting there going, ugh, stop. Now, dude, just stop talking.
Let me ask you a question, circling back to the golf balls. You found a golf ball that works for you.
Yeah.
Have you ventured out and tried others for extended periods of time to see if the others work for you even possibly better?
No, I wouldn't
seem like a pretty set in your ways guy.
Well, that's not fair.
That's not a negative.
Well, I think it's harder for me because I like to buy in bulk and I'm at the end of my bulk purchase of my, so the ball we're talking about is Bridgestone's Tour BRX. And I would bet close to 20 dozen at one point and had them stacked up and have slowly gone through them. And I'm at the end of the rope. So I think for me at this point, it was like, yeah, I'm interested in other things. I'm interested to see what other options are out there and whether they can perform similarly. Mm-hmm. I think the problem is you find something that works. It has the durability you're looking for, which I think Bridgestone does a nice job with. And do you stray? Do you intentionally just like try? Because I do that with clubs all the time. I'm very guilty with that. The ball is
that bizarre.
Why is it bizarre?
Do it with clubs and not golf balls.
I mean, everyone knows.
One seems like a much less expensive.
One would be a lot easier than the other. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you're a good golfer. You could pick up a sleeve and have it last multiple rounds in most cases.
Ideally, yeah.
Yeah. So I would think that it would be a pretty fun experience. If listeners actually make it this far in this complete nonsense that we're talking about, I think you should challenge Dan to play the opposite. He's, you know, we did our videos. He's always goes for something low spin, lower compression. He likes that soft feel. Challenge him to try something on the other end of the spectrum. Maybe one of the newer ones that have come out, like ChromeSoft XLS, Left Ash from Titleist, you know, something that's firmer, but still low spin off the tee, and see see, I think you should challenge him on this. He is not looking happy about this.
I'm laughing. I don't know. You pressed me. I'm just going to skip right to it since you seem to be ready to tee me up all episode long. Do you have any questions for me today, Josh?
Why are you so stuck in your ways?
Yeah, no. I'm not.
Okay, I have a couple questions.
Yeah.
First, in 10 days, I'm going to be at PGA National with some THPers, along with Keenan from True Temper and Jason Finley from Callaway. We're going to play a little game. What game should we play, Dan?
Oh, Alt Shot.
No, it's not going to be Alt Shot.
Well, I'm not playing, so it's not my problem. I've always really
they have this new course there called the Match Course. It's 13 okay. holes, I believe. There's no tee markers. You pick your own. Like, what game should we play if we're going to make it two teams of four?
Two teams of four. Oh, interesting. I don't know. Ooh, I got it.
Are you going to share it?
Two-man best ball.
Yeah.
But have 13 holes, you said?
Yeah, I think it's either 12 or 13.
Two of the 13 need to be train wrecks, so every score counts.
That's not bad. That's not bad. Yeah. I'll be curious if any of the participants from that show listen to this. And they're like, oh, God, yeah, no.
It's like, wait.
Second question. If you tried a golf club that was extremely unconventional, but you picked it up, let's say, in the tech studio, and you hit it multiple times, and it worked remarkably well, but it was super unconventional.
Define unconventional. Like,
I'm not going to go as far as saying like a chipper, but okay, unconventional.
No, not a chipper.
Would you give something a shot?
Yeah.
Because you seem to always go back to same style, similar style, I'd say, same grips, same shafts, same golf ball.
Well, the shafts are a challenge. I've constantly tried to sort that out.
Are they, Dan?
And yeah.
Didn't I'd we say just so. Have this conversation?
Yeah. Mentally, yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, my track record's okay for trying new things. I would have a harder time justifying something like let's use some examples here. Maybe like a shovel-y type product.
You know, shovels are rather thin.
Yeah. But like a hybrid style iron, I would be challenged with. A good example there.
For those following along, I once watched Dan go one under through four holes using nothing but a hybrid five iron, including to putt.
It's pretty awesome. The original
one club.
Cleveland Altitude. And that had a one Miyazaki Sekua shaft in his suite.
Yeah, one under on multiple holes using just a single club.
But in my defense, I've used very interesting clubs in like the three iron E spot, four iron spot. So like
that wasn't the
I had Speed Zone in there, which is a step out of my comfort zone. Would you not agree?
So the answer is no.
I want an answer here. Would you agree? I've
no. That's a freaking hybrid spot.
I've experimented driver alternatives. I've experimented in I'm currently experimenting with 15 degree hybrids.
I'm just shaking my head at him right now.
To replace fairway wood. I mean, you would have, I will flat out say no on the chipper. I have too much fun with my wedge game to eliminate that. But I'm limited on my examples elsewhere. I think the one thing you could catch me on is, would I play an entire set of something like ZX4? I think is where you're getting to. And the answer is
I was going with a game improvement type of club. I know for years there was some consistency, you know, precision type. That's not really the case anymore, as we've seen over and over again. So
I would say probably. I would need validation.
You had it.
I hit the 7-iron very well, yes.
I mean, we also, don't forget, we did a video with you hitting blade traditional wedges versus large oversized large sole wedges, and in the middle of the video you looked like completely baffled because the large oversized wedges were more precise than the blade ones were.
What are we talking about? The
CBX versus Zipcore.
CBX, yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah, I'd probably put one or two of those in the bag and not think too much about it.
But you haven't.
Well, because, you know, Adele's been a lot of fun so far.
That's true.
I'll give full credit. And SMS kind of has its own properties in there that are supportive of golfers. And it's a very different concept. So
it is.
You know, in my defense, I've been a little
to free sum there. It up. Why don't we do a one length challenge with you, Dan?
No, out. Pass.
See?
This is that, what we deal that's with. A good one. You got me there. See, one length is very with. Curious. However, no.
Well, I tried. Say, for those listening, I tried.
I say you should do
it. I have done it. You said it wouldn't last a month, and here we are on 9 months.
How many rounds have you played?
Full rounds? Not a ton, but I've played. I've gone and played a lot of golf this year.
Okay. You win. Yeah. What do you want to hear from me? hey, Josh, it was fun today, buddy. I appreciate you always coming on. We had two things we were going to talk about, three things we were going to talk about that we didn't, per usual.
You want to tease it up for next time?
No.
Okay.
You know what's going to happen next time? We're going to get one topic in, and then we're just going to go wherever we need to. So,
yeah. I do want to say one thing.
Yeah,
throw it out there. Next week, we have signups for a THP event coming called Rivalry.
Rivalry with UST Mamiya.
Yes.
It's Mike Thomas, former member, Illiterate against JDAX, a.k.a. Dax Jeter. Do you have early predictions on who's in whose head? Because they're both in each other.
Well, I mean, the world is in both of their heads.
Yeah.
Let's start with that. Here's what I would say as an impartial person following along, because both of these guys I consider personal friends. Danny from UST and I are both playing in this event, although we don't know what team yet. We think we're going to put ourselves on the team that gets less entries. So when people enter, they're going to have to choose who they want to play with. Doesn't mean they're going to end up on that team.
Do you have a prediction on which one?
I don't actually. Originally I was like, Illiterate seems more popular. He'll probably get more entries. And he's been in more events where he can summon the crew. But, you know, it's gotten a little testy. I think Illiterate just called JDAX a sandbagger yesterday on the forum.
Yep.
As somebody who's played with Dax once in the last 6 months, I can tell you that's not sandbagging. That's the world is living rent free in his head. I'll be very curious to see what happens. I think we have, here's what I would say, because I'm going to get both of them really mad at me right now.
Perfect.
We have anger versus slow play. And that is what we're dealing with.
Which one's which?
We have 45 second pre-shot routines versus 9 club throws around. That's what we're dealing with right
now. Now I got it. Okay. Well, and it's going to be a lot of fun. And it is. You guys have a cool spot set
up. And it's all in fun.
And yeah, the intention is obviously just like Daxie's, his odds threads prior to these THP events. It's all meant to be fun. We look forward to seeing who you guys pick on the forum in the signups. And like every other big THP experience, I'll be in the thread cheering you guys on, giving you grief.
You're not going to sign up to play?
I don't know. Maybe I'll come and watch. What do you think?
I don't know. That's up
I'll
to
come
you.
And follow along. Yeah. Well, yeah, is it? It's pictures. In Nashville, right?
It is in Nashville.
Oh, it's I at, could do they, this one then.
They okay. used to both be members at this course. And the last time that I was with them and they played a single hole as a tiebreaker and Illiterate won. And it was so testy. Dex didn't even shake his hand. So There's a real rivalry.
There's no way I'm missing that.
Yeah, I'm concerned about both their well-beings.
Yeah.
But I'm rooting for both of them to have a great time.
Well, we look forward to following along here at PGA National a couple weeks, my friend. It's been a fun couple months on THP so far. Q4 has been a blast. So if you guys are looking for a place to talk golf, give your wife a break and join us over at thehackersparadise.com. I'll be there talking all weekend about golf because the mother and father-in-law are in town. So I need an outlet. Josh, man, thank you so much. Like I said, man, travel safe, buddy. Appreciate you.
Anytime.
All right. Anyone out there playing golf this weekend, have a blast. Play well and make those shots count, because for here in the Midwest, it is going to be suck season here very, very soon. Winter's coming. See you next week.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.